You're listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by the National Retail Federation. Join us for a look inside the world's largest and most interesting industry. And now your host, Bill Thorne.
Welcome to another episode of Retail Gets Real, where we talk about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. My name is Bill Thorne. I'm with the National Retail Federation. I am joined by my co-host, the lovely Susan Retta.
Hello, hi, Bill.
Susan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. We've got a great episode.
We sure do.
We're going to be talking to someone that knows a lot about retail, about what makes retail tick, and gives us a good sense of not only where we've been, but where we are and where we need to go. And that's the NRF's chief economist, Jack Kleinhens. Jack, welcome.
Thanks for having me today.
Jack, you know, economic forecasting. I read somewhere that economic forecasting is only there to make astrology look respectable.
Oh, now, Bill, come on.
But I'm just saying, you know, economic forecasting is tough. And you can get it, and then sometimes things happen and, you know, things you can't anticipate. So how do you, and you've done it very successfully over 7 years for the NRF, how do you get to a point where you feel comfortable with what you're forecasting, whether it's in sales or, you know, for the holidays, you know, what goes into that?
Well, Bill, you don't do it, do that occasionally once a year. You really need to monitor the data on a day-to-day basis and kind of look at patterns and see what the data is trying to tell us. In fact, in some ways, that's what my job is taking the pieces of data, putting it together like a jigsaw puzzle. And I'm trying to figure out what the top of the box looks like every day. And then on a regular basis, I have to sort of view this and provide perspective and model it and provide forecasts. So it's a combination of science and it's a combination of art and it's just being very watchful. I'm almost like a watchdog on the data.
Now, when you have you do retail, there are a lot of folks out there that if you had 10 economists, do they all use different models or do they pretty much rely on the same stuff?
Well, there is sort of a core pattern that we know that people basically earn their income and they also have other wherewithal to spend, like credit, or perhaps the value in their homes. So it's really a combination of a number of key variables and how you put them together. And so my model is going to be very similar to most other economists when we're looking at measuring consumption, measuring household spending, because really the base connection between spending is income. And if you don't have the income, you're not going to be able to spend.
So it starts with income, but do you look at spending by category? And is that something that you do quarterly, monthly?
Sure. Well, you know, on a month-to-month basis, the data is available. Bureau of Economic Analysis produces an estimate of what personal income is and after-tax income, as well as consumption. So we're monitoring that on a monthly basis. And then we aggregate it over time and we'll process it and put through our statistical model. But, you know, in some cases, it's not just what the data comes out of the model that you're looking at. You have to provide sometimes perspective because these are estimates. They're not perfect numbers.
You know, that's an interesting point because I would think that, so you get all the numbers, you have the statistical analysis, but do, you know, conversations that you have with retail leaders or other economists, does that also play into it?
Oh, absolutely. I'm in constant conversations with retailers, my colleagues, other people who are also monitoring the economy. You know, the economy has a lot of moving parts. It's very dynamic and it changes all the time. And going back to my example of puzzle pieces and trying to determine what the top of the box looks like, just think about those puzzle pieces are constantly changing every single day or every month. So it's kind of a moving picture we're trying to figure out. So, you know, it's a challenge to a certain extent, but you kind of, from time of an experience, you kind of recognize what might happen, what could happen.
You know, I'm curious, Jack, you've been doing this for a long time. And in retail, we talk all the time about how technology has changed our industry. How has technology changed the way you do your job?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. Actually, I've been around too long probably because I started in economics when we had...
We're all 29. It's fine.
Yeah.
But you probably don't remember doing data keep key entry by using punch cards.
I do. Did I just say that?
You did.
Susan.
No, I have no recollection whatsoever. Never seen a punch card.
Yeah.
That stack that you had in a rubber band, and if you just got one out of place. Yeah.
So just the technology that you have in your iPhone is probably 10,000 times stronger than the original computers that I learned how to do economic analysis and modeling on. And what we can do within minutes used to take hours and days to compute. So the technology, like it's transforming retail and how we are shopping, well, it's transformed my profession considerably, and it's even continuing to change. We hear a lot about big data, and big data has influenced economic analysis because it's instant information. It's not survey data. It's instant information about certain transactions, and it's really the same kind of question. What's the data telling us? And that's really what I do. I'm a storyteller. I take the data, I look at the patterns, and then I try to say, does this make sense? And then I try to provide my perspective and communicate it.
Really interesting.
Yeah. So how, okay, that's how you do it. How does it look? I mean, how does retail look for this year? How is it performing to date?
Well, as you recall, earlier this year, we released our annual forecast. Retail is expected to grow between 3.7 and 4.2% on a year-over-year basis. I just really, the other day, recompiled the data because there was a lot of updates on the data that we use. And we're still looking pretty much in that range. We had a lackluster first quarter, not just retail, but the economy overall. But really, at this point in April, we had a couple of good months of retail sales, and I think the consumer is still fundamentally strong. And I think as we go into the second quarter, we'll have a good performance broadly for the economy and importantly for retail.
But all these headlines I'm reading right now, all these store closings, jobs being lost, painting an awfully rosy picture versus what the reporters are saying.
That's correct. And what's going on in the financial markets on these stores is not necessarily mean that consumers have gone away and stopped shopping. The market has been changing, and consumers have changed their behavior. So there's a number of factors that are going into why we've had some challenges for many of our retailers. People are not spending the way they used to, and population and demographics has changed considerably. For instance, we had high populated areas in the Midwest and the Northeast 20, 30 years ago. They moved out. So those big boxes, those malls are just not being in demand. So that's one of the factors. And it's a highly competitive market because of the internet. There's extreme intensive pricing. So people can find out right away. If I go to store A, store B, or go to the internet, I know what I can buy and for what price. And so it's become a very challenging environment. As we know, retail runs on a thin margin. So a lot of competition, no pricing power. It's part of the results. But I'd like to make it clear, though, the consumer hasn't gone away.
Right. Jack, I'm really curious about demographics because I look at the emerging Gen Z group, millennials, baby boomers. We're all in there and we're all spending differently because we have different mindsets about spending and we're in different places in our lives. As you look at the up-and-coming demographics, do you feel like they will continue to drive the retail industry the way baby boomers did years back?
Well, there's no doubt that as the population gets older, it changes its buying habits. And does the population also reflect sort of the culture and the experiences of that time? As a baby boomer, we had a good carryover from the post-World War II and the economy was growing. And was going to stores and buying things. It was part of the popular way of doing things, and it's changed, and it will change. I think that there are pieces and parts that we try to attribute to, like millennials today, but I think as they get a little older, they become recognize that, yeah, buying a house might be the right thing if I'm having a baby.
Right.
Living in downtown Manhattan, it may not be the best place to bring up a child. And so, you know, I think that they'll go through the steps. They're just doing things a little later, getting married later, having children later. You know, a number of factors have changed. But there will be differences, and we know that. I mean, it's pretty widely known that millennials, and I hate to just kind of categorize them because we all have different preferences, but millennials know that they really want to do different things, look for experiences, spend money differently. I mean, expectations of the future. I mean, for instance, housing is one of the areas that the post-World War II consumer household, you know, that was where they thought, if I buy the house, it'll appreciate, I can move into another house and make a little bit of money. That's probably not going to be the same going forward. In some markets it will, but it won't necessarily be the way people put away their wealth for the future.
Right. I mean, there's so many 20-somethings who won't even consider that right now. They won't even think about buying a car because if you're living in an urban setting, they don't need it. And when they do need it, Zipcar's there for them, Uber's there for them. The whole way that our economy used to rely on people going through those stages of life, as you're saying, those stages are very blurred.
Oh, yes. And I think it's going to continue to change. I mean, we're learning a lot about through big data and even, you know, AI, artificial intelligence, and how that might be applied to our decision process on buying and purchasing goods and services. Very dynamic time of our lives. I mean, you know, when you think back over time, electricity really transformed our economy 100-some years ago. And then the telephone was a very important part. And then certainly computers. So we're on the, you know, a cusp of another sort of transformation.
Let me tell you what's going to happen. Alexa is going to step in and we're all going to just say, Alexa, buy me this. Alexa, order me that. Alexa. And then the economy's going to go up. Everything's going to work out.
That would be a delightful dream now, wouldn't it?
I'm sure Siri will be very upset to hear that. But the, you know, it's really interesting, Jack, when you talk about, you know, how people are investing, because I remember growing up, my father, certainly a World War II veteran, born on the towards the end of the Depression, the Great Depression. But his advice always was land, buy land. It's the only investment. Right. You're going to go up and down, but you're mostly going to go up. And it's a sure bet in his mind. And it's very interesting to see some of the dramatic swings that we've seen in the last 20, 30 years where, yes, it'll go up, the bubble bursts, and man, does it go down.
Well, you know, something I don't think a lot of people realize is that when we had the 2010 census that came out 7 years ago, we should you need to recognize that we had some of the slowest growth in our population in the decade before. And so we are really on a slow growth path. So when you think about why would you want to go into housing? Well, because there's going to be demand. You know, people are going to grow up and follow their parents, and then those people are going to follow their parents. But if population isn't growing, there's not going to be a lot of demand for, you know, the housing market as much as we had seen it. In fact, that's where some of the hemorrhaging is right now. In some markets, like you were saying, regarding cities, people want to live in the cities. But at the same time, then there's plenty of houses that aren't being purchased in some of the suburbs and exurbs. Now, this is not true for across the nation, and everything is location. Right. If you're in southeast United States or southwest United States, that's where the population has moved. But if you're in the Midwest or Northeast, it's a big challenge. People have moved on, and people have gotten older, and we don't have the replacement, which would begin the cycle of demand for housing that you were talking about, Bill.
You know, you were talking also earlier about the jobs, and a lot of people have been speculating that retail is hemorrhaging jobs. You know, but I would have to think that with the advances and the changes and the evolution of the industry, that what you're doing is you're creating new and different jobs that are almost as important, if not more so, in the long term as retailers react to the changing tastes and desires of the consumer. Retail jobs, are we good?
Well, in terms, I think just talking about jobs in general, I mean, in fact, when you say, are we good? Let's just talk about today. While we've seen these headlines, it's very interesting that you look below the water level and you see actually that we have over 500,000 openings, 570,000 openings in retail in the month of March. It was the second largest number of openings for any March. And we have 725,000 people that were hired. And sure, there's been people moving and there's been layoffs, but as a labor economist, we're saying this is a healthy market. And that's today. Now, the question you're posing is so as we're transforming, are we going to need different skills and training? And absolutely, there's no doubt about it. This is not only in retail, but it's also across other industries. And I know that we're working very hard at the Retail Federation to create the potential for these individuals to be trained and qualified for the future. And it's going to take time. We don't know exactly when and how all the technology is going to change, but we need to have people that are proficient and at least do some of the jobs differently than they had before. But I just also want to underline that people still want to shop. They want the experience. It's recreational. It's social. So we're not going to do everything by talking into a little box saying, buy me a sweater or buy me a bag of groceries.
I'm the last person who wants to do that. I want the social aspect too. But I think, you know, one of the things that gets lost here is this perception versus reality when we talk about retail jobs, because the perception is that the retail job is the person that we see when we walk, when we cross a threshold into a store and we look, oh, well, these sales associates are losing jobs because stores are closing. But what is really happening is that as our industry is changing, the opportunity for people to take different jobs in retail that really power our industry. No one talks about what's happening in logistics and supply chain and all of the computer jobs that are out there. We need data scientists in retail. I mean, there's a real dearth of data scientists to deliver the AI expertise that you talk about. And I wonder how you would address that.
It's a very tall order. There's no doubt about it. And it has to begin, you know, early on in a child's education. It's a whole process change that we think about what are we doing in our elementary, high school, and even in college careers. I mean, there's a whole programming that needs to be thought about for that oncoming group of people, for the existing group of people. You know, they're going to need help. They're going to need some training. They're going to need some assistance. But I want to make a point, though, is that, you know, it's interesting about retail. If you stay in the space, it's been shown that if you learn the job, you become a manager or coordinator. You're going to learn communication skills. You're going to learn the operations. You're going to get into management. And at some point, you're actually a very skilled individual and very transferable within retail or outside retail. You don't get that same experience if you're in manufacturing, per se. If you're on the line, you're on the line, yeah. You know. But actually, there's been studies that shown that if you gain these skills through working in this retail, you're very transferable and can earn as much money as if somebody was in manufacturing doing some kind of a online work. When I say online, manufacturing line, not online on the computer. I probably mixed my references.
You know, we have time for just one more question. I want to ask you this. You know, everybody talks about manufacturing, bringing jobs back. We need to create products here in America and sell them to Americans. And sell abroad, be aggressive about that. What, if you were to look into the future, the manufacturing where it was and where people want it to go, is it even possible?
Great question. Of course, it kind of enters into the political sphere now. My observation would be is looking at the data, okay, just purely looking at the data, we're never going to go back to where we were 10, 15, 20 years ago. We are already using a lot of technology that has really displaced individuals, and we're being more productive in our manufacturing. And consequently, there's going to be less people being used. And the data shows that. And the more technology and the AI that we're talking about and sort of machine learning that gets applied in the manufacturing process, it's probably going to, you know, change the capital labor mix to the extent that we're probably going to sustain ourselves. We're going to maybe have more manufacturing, but I'm not convinced. I can just tell you categorically, we're never going to get back to where we were, largely because we've already gone through a transformation in that industry, across this industry.
That's a great answer. Jack, before we let you go, this is the part of the program that we call rapid fire. So we're going to ask you some questions, and they're very short, and you just answer with the first thing that comes to mind. And there aren't any numbers involved unless we can figure something. I know that would probably make you happy, but why don't we go ahead? Rapid fire. Susan,
all right,
take her away.
There's a movie made about your life. Who's going to play you?
Paul Newman. He's dead.
That would be a miracle. Wine or beer?
Wine.
Main Street or Wall Street?
Oh, that's a tough one. Caught me in between. I'm going to go Wall Street.
What's the last good book you read?
Last good book I've read was...
Do you read
Pillars of the World? I do read.
The receipt in the bag or in their email box? In your email?
Both.
Last thing you bought online?
Backrest.
Very good. Jack, we can't thank you enough for your insights. You've done a great job for the retail industry generally, and for the National Retail Federation specifically. And Susan, thank you for a great session. And I hope that we'll post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. And don't forget to subscribe and share the show with your colleagues and friends. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher. This is Retail Gets Real, and thanks for joining.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.